So we are here at the closing session to what has been a fantastic couple of days of discussion. I understand lots of different perspectives, different types of organisations, and lots of inspiring initiatives have been chewed over the last 2 days. My name's Elizabeth Collett. I am the currently absent director of the Migration Policy Institute Europe and acting as the special advisor to the new director general of the International Organization for Migration. And I am delighted to be back here today, despite a 4:30 a.m. start. That's how delighted I am that I got up at 4:30 a.m. to be here, to have a conversation about social innovation, entrepreneurship, and thinking differently about some of these issues. Because I think one of the things that strikes me about sitting here is big bureaucracies often struggle to think about entrepreneurship and innovation because processes and managing large numbers of people and managing huge issues often inhibit thinking differently about things. But here we are together, a whole group of different people with different ideas. And for that, I would like to thank the United States mission to the EU, the Canadian mission to the EU, and the Economic and Social Committee for being fantastic partners and supporters of this initiative as it goes into its third year. Is this right? Yes, third year. There's some nods. You guys know better than I do at this point. I think you get a card stamp at the end of this. So once we've done this 5 times, you'll get a free conference at the end of it. We have around 40 minutes for this afternoon, but we have 3 fantastic speakers. I would like to invite them all to give some very short reflections on this conference and some of the things they've heard over the last 2 days, and then hopefully we'll have a little time for some interventions from the floor and some Q&A to wrap up at 1 o'clock. We unfortunately do not have with us David Manicom, who is the Assistant Deputy Minister for Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada, because of a snowstorm on one or other side of the Atlantic. My understanding is that it was worse in Ottawa, but my knowledge of Belgian infrastructure suggests that that might not have been the problem. So instead, we have Mary Coulter, who is the Immigration Councillor at the Canadian Mission to the European Union. And from talking with her over the last several years, I know that it is not a poor replacement. It is actually a very rich replacement, and we are very lucky to have you join our panel. And perhaps I can ask you to give us some reflections before we turn to our other panelists. Thanks.
Merci beaucoup, Liz. Thank you very much. And a quick thank you to my partners, which Liz mentioned. I don't think we certainly wouldn't be able to do it without this really excellent collaboration and partnership amongst ourselves. I want to cluster my comments or reflections around 3 different areas or 3 different themes. But just to let you know, I think I've changed my notes about 10 times just this morning. So hearing from all of you has really inspired me, and I think I've grown even in the short time of this morning's sessions. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is really a personal reflection, and that's about the sense part of a sense of home. When Anila Noor spoke on day one, she asked us all to close our eyes, and I would invite you to do that again. And for a moment, think about a place that's home for you. For all of us, that's going to be very different. The images in our minds will be different. But I can guarantee you the feeling that you're having is a shared feeling. And I think very much it's that shared feeling that we has to serve as a litmus test when we look at policies and programs and initiatives, and not only in the outcome. So I have to say, when I came, was thinking about this, and I thought it was wonderful, and I kept coming back to this sense during the sessions yesterday, I was thinking of it in terms of an outcome. Where are we getting to? What is that sense of home? Even if it's not a physical structure, what is that? And then I went to a very good session this morning, and I heard from Louise Ebeltoff, and she was talking about the work that she was doing with vulnerable refugee women. And she talked about an experience she had where one of her women that she worked with had been out during the day looking for a job, involved in other activities. And she came in and she walked through the door of the shelter and she said, "Oh, it's so good to be home." And I think that really needs to inform the way that we do our work. At every stage of someone's journey, every part of that integration process, we as policymakers, we as NGOs, we as communities need to think how do we act from a place of kindness, a place that the goal really, even at those incremental steps, is to bring to the people involved, both in the community side and the refugee side, that wonderful sense of home, of being yourself, being surrounded by people that you trust. When I woke up this morning coming into this group, I had a bit of that feeling. I thought, wow, I've had some very good conversations. I feel supported. I feel like I can do my best. I feel I can start my day well. And I think we need to remember that when we do our work. The second thing I'd like to talk about is the local level. So I would say in every conversation, coffee, running down the hall discussion, there was a little bit of that local knowledge. You know, where does integration happen? Where do home initiatives, partnerships, where are they happening? And I think very much it's at the local level. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, and I will, about what Canada's doing in terms of innovation at the local level. And I'll end just by speaking a little bit about narratives. So I think that was another theme that was carried through the discussions. How do we communicate what it is we're doing in a meaningful way? How do we use language that brings us together instead of pulling us apart? So I'll talk about what Canada's doing, and then maybe talk a little bit about the future of this conference and maybe what we want to bring to the next time, the next stamp on our card, I guess. There we go. So innovation at the local level in Canada includes networks, so networks of delivery, service delivery organizations that involve all levels of government. But they also involve a robust network of individual volunteers, community-level civil society organizations, and also the private sector. We help to nourish, as a government, we help to nurture these community-based focus by providing federal funding to LIPS, so those are local integration partnerships, or the Réseau en Immigration Francophone. They lead community planning efforts to address newcomers' needs at the local and the regional levels. Not only do they engage with employers, but also community partners like the police and the emergency services, since they know that newcomers will have multiple points of interaction within their community. Volunteers, really important, and we harness volunteers in a positive way to engage at the local level, and our partners depend on the work of thousands of volunteers across Canada. While the training and the management of these volunteer networks can be expensive, it's proven time and again to be a vital investment for Canada. On the settlement innovation funding, we're testing innovative ways to harness volunteers, including a project to reduce social isolation of newcomer seniors and empower them to serve in their community as intergenerational volunteers. Through this project, volunteer newcomer seniors are trained to work with preschool children to support school readiness and social well-being. Those of us working in national governments need to do what we can to encourage new approaches, such as the local level, share the best ideas across the country, and scale up where it makes sense. That's the main goal of settlement innovation funding, which is supporting 100 small-scale projects in communities across Canada, evaluating them, and then scaling those that show the broadest potential for impact. When considering local integration innovation, we really understand the newcomer integration journey and aim at the best outcomes. We've also begun to take what we call a human-centered design approach to policy. These are processes that start with understanding that people that you're designing for and end with the solutions that are tailor-made to suit the end users rather than the needs of the policymakers. This process allows us to more deeply understand the lived experience of settlement from a client perspective. When we applied this technique to the settlement arena, we found that having direct conversations between ourselves, bureaucrats, and newcomers helped to create a culture shift towards a more client-centered approach to delivering programs and services. This fieldwork gave us rich qualitative data that we cannot usually obtain from our traditional program evaluations and client outcome surveys. With this, we were able to identify gaps in services and policies that we wouldn't have otherwise noticed or been able to identify with such clarity and depth. We're currently exploring specific interventions stemming from design challenge that will be tested in specific projects. Some of the themes that emerged from the research were the need to increase our focus on newcomer mental health and well-being that was discussed during these sessions, and provide more opportunities for newcomers to give back to the community rather than being viewed only in the lens of people with needs. These insights have helped to inform and shape our upcoming funding guidelines for our settlement services. As you can see, we've put a lot of thinking into integration at the local level. And our thinking is anchored in using the most innovative tools to deepen our understanding of the newcomer experience and to leverage the benefits of local integration efforts that are rooted in our towns and our cities. Last summer, The Economist suggested that the survival of a liberal democracy may in part depend on championing localism with the same vigor that globalization has been championed for the past 40 years. I think that championing localism is one of the best approaches to finding the smartest new ideas for addressing integration. I only have 30 seconds, so I'll keep it short, my last comment, but hopefully I can come back to it in the questions. So to pick up on the question of narratives, I just want to share with you a new Government of Canada initiative that we launched this fall called Immigration Matters. And it's a campaign promoting positive effects of immigrations and seeking to dispel common myths about immigration and promote positive engagement with Canadians. We do that by asking members of the public to share success stories, which are uploaded and shared about positive outcomes and positive narratives. So if I had more time, I'd tell you more, but I'm going to be respectful. So thank you, Liz. Yeah.
Thank you very much, and I hope we do get to come back to that. And I'm inspired by the idea that the Canadian government can invest in networks and invest in a client-oriented approach, which suggests that they are moving towards a sort of new generation of organizations that think differently from hierarchies, but actually draw through the organizations as opposed to thinking top-down. We'll be interested to see how that plays out. From that, I would like to turn to the other end of the Atlantic, this end of the Atlantic, and Laura Corrado, who is the head of unit for legal migration and integration at DG Home in the European Commission. And I would be fascinated by your thoughts on discussions over the last couple of days and where you think the opportunities are from an EU perspective to invest further here.
Thank you very much, Liz, and thanks very much to the US-Canadian Mission and the European Economic and Social Committee for organizing this and inviting also the Commission to be actively participating into the discussion. I unfortunately could not be there yesterday, but I had a very interesting feedback from my colleagues about the rich discussion that took place in the different panels, and I was here myself this morning listening to an interesting discussion about how to measure success. I think the focus, of course, was on housing, the sense of home and what it means. But I think a lot of topics have been touched upon, really enlarging to really social inclusion and more broadly, which I think it's normal because it's very difficult to and impossible to disconnect different aspects. Labor market, integration, inclusion, housing, it's part of a whole. I've also tried to do my homework and try to reflect on the questions about the fact that, of course, migration and asylum are very divisive in Europe and not only these days. And in this context, how do we is the innovative social approaches are a luxury now, or is it something that with when governments cut budgets, then it's still worth investing on? And how do we pass the message that this is important and it's in the interest of the whole society? And I think looking at the projects, some of which have been discussed here and presented, but also other projects that we have been co-financing from the European Union level, and we have I've discussed discover myself also preparing for this, that there is a lot of innovative projects that overall, under different funding, the Commission is financing actively, and that have led to really interesting projects. Some have been described today under the urban innovative actions or on the social bonds and so on. So most of them, they rethink a bit the concept. We have the notion of integration, a two-way process, which is fine, but there is a total rethinking of, and a more holistic, I would say, sorry to abuse the word, but really saying it's not about integrating them into our society, but it's really about the inclusive society as a whole. And there was also an interesting discussion and about active participation, active citizenship of everybody, and also about the fact that, you know, the services, improving services for migrants and refugees in a way can also lead to a more accessibility of services for everyone, for other vulnerable categories that have difficulties in accessing services. There was also some interesting remarks in the workshop, the discussion that I followed this morning about this, about maybe avoiding the discussion about integrating them to avoid also the polarization of the society, so to show that what we are doing and investing for migrants and refugees is something that is beneficial to all. And I'm thinking of some projects that have been financed under the Innovative Action of reception center, which are not only reception center, but are really neighborhood center, community centers where people of the neighborhood, and not only migrants or refugees, they go and exchange, they do artistic performances, they do social exchanges. So I think through this project, and I fully agree with Mary about the importance of the local level and how much the local level can be a champion of innovation, social innovation. This is really the only way, probably now, also to start changing slowly, but continuously changing also the overall narrative. It is very difficult, of course, to do this when you have an overall political environment which does not encourage that, or on the contrary, in some countries, even in Europe, promotes actively and logic of us versus them, or natives first and the others will see. So, and that's why I think it's so important to work with national governments, and of course these are our main interlocutor also from the European Union Commission side, but also with other stakeholders, being the local level and the cities. And there, as many of you already know, we have been investing a lot from the Commission side. Thanks to the Urban Agenda, we have this partnership on inclusion of migrants and refugees, where we have developed concrete actions, this Urban Academy for Local Practitioners that we launched last year and that we will organize next year to really exchange practices at local level. We have been also working and investing very much in working with other stakeholders, of course, the non-governmental organization, but also the business and the economic and social partners on labor market integration. So I think this is really the answer, investing with all actors, even from the European level directly, without this being in competition with the relationship and dialogue and cooperation that we have with member states, but really complementary. Another question that I was asked to reflect upon, but which also emerged in the discussion this morning, is about the sustainability of this innovative approach. How can we ensure that they bear long-term fruits? And of course, it's a difficult question to which maybe there is no easy answer. But one comment that was that I heard this morning that I also share, that what is important, I mean, it's not only the financial sustainability. First of all, it might be one of the questions, because when you end the financing from a project, then of course it's a very practical and concrete question. So, or on the fact of, for example, if migrants and refugees are involved in a project in producing some sort of goods, how to ensure that they can be sellable, there is a market for that. I mean, this can be one part of the answer. But I think the other question is how to put it into a more systemic approach. And for that, of course, you need the support of public authorities. So this remains indispensable, national and local level, and maybe also from the European one, so that you can really encourage the scaling up in some cases and the sustainability in the longer term. So I think this remains a challenge for all of us. But I think we need to continue to invest into encouraging innovations. And I also discovered that there is a social innovation platform that we are financing in Horizon 2020, really putting together people, organizations that have challenges, social challenges, with entrepreneur, with organizations, and really trying to do the matching in that respect. So I would also like to comment on narratives, but maybe I will do it later when you raise the questions for the debate, Liz, and I will stop it here for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think particularly for me, hearing someone from the European Commission talk about rethinking and evolving ideas on integration, and quite often when we hear sort of ideas, they stay set in stone for forever and ever. And I think hearing that there are new concepts and new ways of thinking about integration in this context is very interesting. Last and certainly not least, I'd like to turn to Saoirse Edwards, who is the Secretary General of Housing Europe. And I hope that you can help us think about where social innovation fits in the broader challenges that the housing sector is facing, but also how this then connects to other parts of social inclusion writ large. Thanks.
Thanks, Elizabeth, and thanks a lot for the organisers for giving us opportunity to be here on the concluding panel. I think you mentioned about the importance of bringing in local stakeholders and non-bureaucratic entities. So I think having us here really shows that this conference also wanted to take that direction, because we're representing basically local housing providers. We've already been well represented over these days. So we had Ashley Community Housing Association, who is one of the 46,000 local non-speculative, non-for-profit housing providers in the European Union. And you also had the Start Block initiative, which is run by De Kees Housing Association, one of the oldest housing associations in Amsterdam, leading one of the most innovative integration projects, I think, in Europe at the moment. So I would like to just kick off by linking into this discussion about narratives and bringing up maybe slightly divisive phrase, but the enemy does not arrive by boat, they arrive by limousine. This was a banner coming from the 70s, let's say, at a protest march. But I think especially we're looking at the housing sector and the fact that housing can be a very divisive issue, and the lack of affordable housing is a very divisive issue, and particularly in this context of the migration flows coming into Europe. We have to look at the fact that the lack of affordable housing is not only an issue linked with immigration, it really is a structural problem, and I've been asked to touch on that. So we can see that through underinvestment in the commons, in public housing, in social housing, going back 3-4 decades, through the reduction in subsidies for construction, so an emphasis which is really going on money going to individuals, so benefits which eventually end up in the private sector, so a gradual erosion of investment in the commons when it comes to housing, in the non-for-profit sector, we have ended up in a situation where we have what is a de facto exclusionary housing approach in our capital cities. So you've probably heard about different examples, maybe more controversial examples of exclusionary housing policies in history, redlining approach in the US or under apartheid system, a decision to remove certain people from cities. But actually what we are experiencing slowly in our cities is a de facto exclusion of low-income groups, of vulnerable groups, of key workers, and of those people that the fabric that make up the fabric of our cities, make up the diversity of our cities. And at Housing Europe, one of our key missions is to have cities and have neighbourhoods that can welcome students, that can welcome migrants, that can welcome key workers, and make sure those people can reach their full potential in those neighbourhoods. So this is the situation in Europe with this long-standing underinvestment and slow exclusion of particularly of vulnerable groups from areas where the jobs are, where people can really reach their full potential. So on top of this, we have a situation where we have an extra influx of low-income groups and people needing, people requiring assistance. So this will really be the core of, is it the core of our position at European level as Housing Europe, is to really also change the narrative, not just about migration, but also about the importance of housing and public housing and not-profit housing as public wealth. How every euro that is invested in public, non-for-profit, or cooperative housing, community-led housing, brings back €2 to the economy. If it is done properly, it can be a springboard out of poverty. And if it is done badly, it can be a poverty trap. So this is the key message that we are putting out there. Public housing, non-profit housing as a public wealth generator. And just over the sessions that I've attended and some of my colleagues have attended over the last couple of days, I see that actually we share a lot, because I think this is also the change in the narrative we need when it comes to migration integration, is also that successful inclusive integration processes can also be of benefit to the broader society, the economy and the society, and this is how we need to change the narrative, so this is seen as an opportunity and not a problem. And then just quickly to talk about the whole social innovation side of things. I mean, I think what we see from the Start Block example, which I hope most of you heard about, so it's really, Start Block is, as I said, introduced by De Kees Housing Association in Amsterdam, but it's really built on a very strong co-creation. Co-creation is really at the core of the initiative. So, the inhabitants of the housing which is provided for young people, half of those are refugees, status holders, and half of those are local students. And the whole housing development is co-managed by these groups under the leadership of the Case Housing Association. And what I've heard today from their representatives here is that this approach has actually been rolled out throughout Amsterdam. There's three more projects in the pipeline right now to roll out this approach. But on the social innovation side, I think what was really core there was the partnership that were established. And this is what we have seen whenever, so we put a call out to our members to talk about, to get them to tell us, okay, do they have positive stories to tell us about integration of migrants? And almost all of those involve partnership working. None of those have really been just the organisation itself just deciding, oh, we're going to suddenly become experts in integration. No. In the case of De Kees, it was a partnership with Socios and with an organisation called Socios, which is expert in managing positive collaboration and cohabitation between different groups, and with the city itself. But other good examples show good collaboration with local schools, with let's say police as well, with local businesses. So this is, I think, the social innovation. It's really new partnerships, new approaches, but also internally. And this is also something we learned through our collaboration to the Desink project with KU Leuven. And it made us also take a step back as representing housing providers. It's also a change internally within the organisation. So to make sure that the leadership within a housing provider is sufficiently diverse, representative of the people that they are providing housing for, and this is something we generally overlook. And also the changing skills that are needed for people working in housing providers. So as I said, you don't just suddenly go from managing the supply of purely bricks and mortars to having a really successful integration process. So there's a big upskilling work to do in local authorities, in NGOs, and in our case, housing providers. And just to finish up on that, I think this we had a really nice panel run by the Desink project, and some colleagues of yours were also there present in the European Parliament. And what was interesting is we had an example from Sozialbau, so that's a limited profit housing cooperative in Austria alongside the Start Block example. And they were both talking about what worked and what didn't work. And what struck me is that, so the Viennese example is was started 20 years ago. They also work with about 50% of Viennese, of locals, and 50% status holders, let's say. And so many of the issues were common. So the importance of common areas, shared areas, but what struck me was there was little mention of the virtual side of things. So from the Viennese example, and the Start Block was also stressing the need for virtual areas of sharing information. And whereas the Viennese example was stressing meeting in the laundry room as an example. And I'd love if somebody's come up with virtual laundry, and I think that would be the. Please tell me about it if that is. But this is why this whole issue of social innovation is. Is all relative, and I think that's why this conference has really taken stock of that. So they've taken stock of the fact that innovation can be understood in many different ways, and the innovation in that project from 20 years ago in Vienna can still be really usefully transferred to new projects coming up at the moment. So yeah, this is what I want, my opening comments that I wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm starting to sense a theme from the three of you, which is also not just what the potential is for social innovation to contribute to refugee inclusion is, but also what the potential of social innovation initiatives are to transform long-standing organisations and more traditional organisations to be able to evolve into a new way of thinking about some of these things, and perhaps that's a topic for next year. But I would like to open to the floor to see if we can gather two or three comments or questions, and then go back once to our panelists for a final reflection so that we can finish on time, because I'm sure you're all hungry. So if there are any people who'd like to speak, put my glasses on so I can actually see you, please let us know. Anyone?
Please. Thank you very much for this kind of hope, you know. Even I think was the great opportunity for establish a network for us. I think that this is a really good opportunity to start this year, and I hope that see a new one even in the coming time. Please, when will be the next one? The next hop? Thank you very much.
Great. Anyone else like to contribute?
Thanks. I was very interested in Sorsha's description of innovation not being about a shiny new thing, but actually being about partnerships. And I was just wondering whether the government people on the panel think that government innovation is also about managing partnerships, or whether it's about something else. So is the most innovative approach you can take in government about a kind of decentralized approach and about managing partnerships along the lines of the LIPS model? Or is there a different kind of innovation in government?
Great question. Obviously from MPI. You wouldn't expect any less. Final comment from the floor?
Yeah, I'm. Did you point to me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I can't see the numbers back there, but I will start calling them out like bingo.
Yeah, Kenny from Ashoka's Hello Europe. I'm really, really pleased to hear about the narrative, because that's, I think a lot of us are running into that. And I think my question is, as we look forward and we look about this partnership and the conference also, do you have thoughts on engaging media and engaging media outlets and others and I know this is super complicated, not necessarily saying just go out and talk to them because it's very difficult, but I'd love to hear some of your thoughts or examples of things that are happening, because from the citizen sector, that's definitely an area that is more and more interesting, and we need to reach out to and figure out how to do that well together.
And in view of the fact all of you are very respectful of the concept of short interventions, we have room for a fourth. Is there another? I saw another hand over here somewhere. No? Anyone else? You're all very respectful or very hungry. We can go back to our panel for some final reflections, and particularly perhaps on these questions. Laura, can I turn to you first? And then go this way.
Thanks. Well, as a public official, as a bureaucrat, I acknowledge that maybe, you know, we are not the most creative by definition. I'm not saying I am not or my colleagues, but by definition, maybe public official or an administration, maybe broadly, is not really the most innovative actor out there. But the thing of acknowledging this means that then you think, what can I do to become creative and innovative? And I think, as I mentioned briefly, what we have been trying to do is really to look and to support and finance those people, those organizations that are by nature more creative, because they have to figure out how do we, for example, create an inclusive environment, how do we put people into jobs, I mean, concretely, really, because it's a need that they have very strongly at the municipality level or in a community. So I think the approach of really fostering and encouraging innovative approaches at local level, but also by NGOs and by trade unions and entrepreneurs, so through mainly funding, I would say, but also by favoring the networking, because as I said, we have started to build a partnership and a network between cities, and I think this will be one of the next priorities for the next commission. I'm advancing myself a little bit too much maybe, but this is what we will try to push also, to have some sort of structural partnership with the local and regional authorities in the future, with the commission, maybe the committee of the region, maybe this committee. I mean, this is something we are aiming for, and we will continue to work into a multi-stakeholders approach also with economic and social actors. So I think for me, at least personally, this is the best way for the commission or for a public authority to foster innovation, really to work, support, finance those who are by nature more inclined to create innovative things. And on the narrative, maybe just a quick thought. I was listening with interest to Mary, and I think I've also seen one of the videos quickly at the mission, which was really a nice one. But then I was reflecting, maybe this works in Canada because there is probably a higher level of trust in the government or in public authorities, or relatively higher than in Europe, and also because there is also migration, which is such an emotional and sensitive topic. In Europe, there is generally a broader support. So maybe a campaign launched by the government is not perceived like, well, of course, this is your usual propaganda, as I think would be perceived if the Commission or the EU would do such a thing, or even at national level. So that's why, even on that, I think in the past year we have not wanted to push this. Of course, there are communication campaigns in view of the election. I'm not saying that the Commission is not active into this. Of course we are. But I mean, the most effective, as we have seen, are those campaigns that we have financed and supported from the ground again. So that be it local authorities or association. We had a number of projects that we financed with last work program of AMIF about awareness raising in communities and so on, which are those that are bearing the best results, frankly. So I think, I don't know, I would like to be interested to hear Mary's reaction to this, if she agrees about maybe, you know, in a country where you have a higher level of public trust into institutions and also where migration is maybe less controversial than in other countries, maybe this works better. But maybe it's not replicable in Europe. I don't know. It's really a personal thought then. Thank you.
Thank you. I have to say, as someone who's just recently shifted from a small, creative, innovative think tank to the United Nations, I can tell you that there is an institutional culture shock going on right now. But it also has highlighted that perhaps, you know, instead of thinking of secondments from other governments, perhaps the European Commission can think of secondments from other sectors.
I'd love to
inspire and bring in some of this thinking for the next commission. So I'll leave that with you. Mary, perhaps we go to you as the question was asked. And then
I'm going to try and be quick. I think it's going to be hard. My quick answer would be yes, yes, and yes to the three comments or questions. My slightly longer one would be that this is the first year, although we've been involved in previous conferences, this is the first time we've sort of put dollars behind our partnership. And what it allowed us to do is expand the activities around the conference. So we really benefited from an excellent group of advisors, external partners who were sort of brought in early days. And I thank those of you who are in the room for giving your input to us as we went along. So will we have another one? I shouldn't say I hope so. I should say yes, as much as I can say it as one of the four partners. I think that as we've gone along, we've realized how much interest it is, how important it is, and the value that you bring both now and at the time between the conferences. And I hope we can continue to reach out to partners and stakeholders for their input. I think lots of interesting ideas, including around media and narrative, coming up, and hopefully we'll be able to reach out and stay in contact between the conferences that have been annual so far. With regard to the second two questions, so maybe I'll try and combine them a little bit. In terms of support for innovation, support for these types of activities, I just turned to my left, and I have both my ambassador here and the Prime Minister's envoy to Europe and the European Union. So yes, we believe in innovation. Yes, I feel well supported. I certainly, in all my years in government, I started, should I say this publicly, 93? Yes. So a long time ago. And I really feel that there's been a huge transformation. Not only an acceptance of risk-taking, but an emphasis on innovation. You see that in our minister's mandate letter. You see that in our vision around settlement and integration. I think it's really within the fabric of the Canadian public service right now. Speaking a little bit to the narrative, to engaging media outlets, to particular to our Immigration Matter campaign, the reason I think it's working, the reason, well, it's early days. I'll be careful about saying it's working, but the reason I like it is that what it does is it simply creates a platform. And community organizations and individuals, there's all sorts of different members who can go ahead and make their own video and upload them. And as we saw the other evening, it's incredible what people can bring to the table. So I think in that respect, there's really the job of government to create possibility, to create opportunity, but it really is up to all of us to make those narratives work. So yes, I believe that, you know, that should at least be part of what we're talking about the next time we come together, is that questions of narrative. How do we bring in the media? How do we look at narratives in an innovative way? And I can tell you Canada will be there. We'll be at the table. Can I do that? I guess I can't.
I'm Dan Costelli, ambassador to the EU, and I always, as a matter of principle, agree with everything Mary says. So this is just an elaboration, because I can't resist from, thank you for being so inclusive and including we from the bureaucracy in these exciting and important discussions, because I want to answer Megan's profound and important question by supporting Mary. You recall for me some of my favorite expressions from inside the bureaucracy, which are that no good deed goes unpunished, and secondly, that it's not ever what the world does to us, it's what we do to ourselves. And so we struggle with this every day. The answer to your question is yes, but it's a caveated yes, because we are held to different standards. We've often remarked that innovation in the public sector cannot be the same as it is in the private sector. We're subject to standards of transparency and accountability that really do change our perception of risk and the way we have to manage it. I speak with my former minister next to me, who used to have to answer in the House of Commons for our mistakes in a way that I think is different in the private and the social, among social partners. But absolutely yes. Innovation, we think of it first in terms of, I think we're trained to think of it in terms of efficiency and effectiveness, more bang for our buck, or same bang for less buck, or this kind of design and delivery work. But frankly, what it's really about is opening the windows. We went through a curious experience in the recent transition, change of government, where people said, more ideas, new ideas. And we sat in closed boardrooms with our fists on our foreheads thinking of new ideas. And you know what? That's not where new ideas come from. Then we opened the windows. The good ideas, and so that's where your point is bang on, except I think of it not so much as decentralization, which, you know, there has to be limits to. Are partnerships really about decentralization? Is innovation really about partnerships and decentralization? Yes, but in government, I would say innovation is about responsiveness, agility and flexibility and responsiveness. I think of Canadian integration policy works, you know, reasonably well. It was not invented by a bunch of smart bureaucrats in a closed room. It was the government responding to demands of local communities and partners out there saying, here's what we're doing and we need your support because it works and because we need it. And so that's why a conference like this, I mean, to see you guys come together and then to build the momentum in describing what's working and demand more support from governments is what we need from you. Because all we can do is open the windows, and then you need to demand our responsiveness. And when you do that, we'll innovate. So I think that's my best response to what innovation is in government.
Thank you very much, Dan. And profound as always, though I'm left with an image now of a room full of besuited Canadians rocking back and forth desperately, mainlining Coca-Cola. I'm going to try and get that out of my head. Last but not least, please, some final thoughts from the housing perspective.
Well, actually, I realise that we're under pressure from the interpreters, but I think I'll just finish with one sentence that my colleague who's working on integration policy, Abdul Rahim, is always reminding us, so talk to each other, not about each other. And I think this is a good conclusion to the sessions that I've attended here today and on our final short discussion here. It's about being inclusive and about giving a voice to those people that we are actually talking about, and giving a clear voice in the press at conferences like this and in all of our work and all of our search for new ideas and innovation. So thank you. I'll finish on that note. Talk to each other, not about each other.
That is a fantastic sentiment to end on, and also lets me off the idea of having to give closing remarks, because it's the perfect way to finish this conference. I would like to thank very much our partners for this whole conference, who have been fantastically supportive, Canada, the US, and here at the Economic and Social Committee. I would like to thank, heartfelt thanks to the MPI Europe team, who have worked incredibly hard, and I've seen how late some of the emails have been coming in. Particularly Alex and Viracos, Liam Petuzzi and Megan and Katarzyna, who have been running around and making sure this is a fantastic conference for you all. We want to take this further. There may be another conference, and if so, we will be issuing stamping cards. We want to continue to think strategically about social innovation for refugee inclusion, and shape the direction of some future events, perhaps moving into different sectors to bring this idea into other sectors. An advisory board of experts in the field will be created, and we will keep you up to date with the information about that advisory board as it goes forward. But it's an idea of trying to keep a conversation going in a smaller format, and hopefully we can come back in these larger formats in the future.